with Paul Daner, Mark Salafo. Kick off the weekend, all right? It's the Growler Friday Show. It's Who Dey Light.
All right, welcome in to Who Dey Light. Paul Daner Jr. of The Athletic. Mark Salafo. What's up, Mark?
What's going on? Greetings from the Sheraton Plaza Hotel in St. Louis.
Oh, man. What an electric environment you have here in your hotel room. It's just, I appreciate it. Looks like you have manicured the background behind you with, what do we got there? What's our Sheraton Fair of Magazines?
So I didn't have a whole lot of time. So I put together, I've got the Holy Bible up here. That's important for every podcast we do. And then yep. The Book of Mormon. That's a new thing that we're trying this week. And then some sections of a Wall Street Journal and a Wall Street Journal magazine. It's a nice little backdrop that I've established here. I would say, too, you get some weird look when you're carrying like a microphone and a ring light through a hotel up to your room.
People, well, I appreciate the effort. Should we read a passage from the Book of Mormon at some point? Or
yeah,
or we just maybe, start maybe, that, maybe that's for the after show. Maybe we save that for the after show.
Yeah. You know what? If you guys stick around long enough, we will have a post-game prayer from the Book of Mormon.
Well, good to see. So you're there doing, you have shows there obviously going on this weekend. This was the big one that some big Growler fans in Missouri were going to show up, right? Or fan.
Yeah, hopefully we've got some Growler friends. People to be there to balance out the St. Louis folks and bring some hometown flavor to these shows. But yeah, we're excited. It's going to be a fun weekend. The St. Charles Funny Bone is a great new club, part of the St. Louis chain. The hotel is still feels like it's under construction. So if you hear any banging, that's not people that hate the show. It's just people that are building the hotel around me. So just so we're on the same page.
I like the idea. Perhaps a guest later on, if there's an incident or if they're just right outside the door, they might as well come on and just actually weigh in with some opinions on maybe the Rams moving to LA or something like that. Because if they're going to be in the episode, they might as well like actually offer something besides just banging or general carpentry.
Yeah. If you see a hammer come through the wall behind me and then maybe I'll just pull this guy into the show. He can give his take on whether or not the Chiefs can win it again. And if Burrow is the main competition for them. So maybe we'll get an interview on this show. We'll see how it goes.
Love it. Love it. Can't wait. So make sure you're if you're around the area, great weekend to go check out Margaret at the Funny Bone in St. Charles. All right, lot to get to here today. There's a lot going on. We've got, of course, draft questions. We got a ton of emails this week. Thank you to everyone that has been sending in emails. That's what drives this show and the direction that we end up going, which sometimes is quite weird. You guys really want to go some weird directions is what we're noticing, is that this seems to be a theme, is that a lot of these questions make me think that maybe our audience has got some problems, but I'm here for it.
It's interesting to me because we've got a lot of these people that are really enjoying the show and some, this is my favorite show on the Growler. You guys are awesome. I like the energy. And then you always get a few people, whether it's in the YouTube or on Twitter, that are like, too much nonsense. Talk more football. They just want every show to be the same and just to do the same T. Higgins talk and offensive line talk every single show. So that's the balance. But yeah, we've kind of followed the questions. We take what they want, and we've gotten a lot of weird ones, a lot of great ones. Keep sending your questions to thegrowlerpodcast@gmail.com. And the VPN controversy continues.
Oh,
a lot of people checking in from around the globe. This week, our new listeners have checked in. The biggest Bengals fan in Bali, Indonesia. And that's self-proclaimed. So if there's a second Bali fan,
I'm going to need proof. I'm going to need proof. I mean, have we had a vote? I mean, I think we need to get a little bit more in depth on that. We can't just let them have that, you know.
Maybe that's, we
like,
need to go.
It's like we are voted best ribs in Arkansas. Like, no, you can't. I'm going to need to know who said that. Okay.
I need to see the ballot. I need to see who certified this ballot. And maybe we need to be on site to test it. He claims Indonesia. We've got Finland checking in. I don't know how to pronounce this town. Suomi. I'm sure they'll get mad about that. Austria last week got mad that we pronounced their little village wrong and that you said that they were in Eastern Europe and they're in Western Europe. So that's a little fact check.
I mean, do I need to know all of my international geography on the spot perfectly? Look, I mean, let's let me let that one slide. Okay. At least I have them in Europe, right? West.
Exactly.
East. It's all relative.
Right. You know, you just spin the globe and you came up closer than some people might have. Also, you effortlessly field all these random questions every week, different Bengals topics. You're talking about disputed canonization of saints effortlessly. Yeah. If you have one little geographical mix up, I think we got to let that slide.
Yeah.
Brisbane, Australia, checking in all the way out in the Claremont County, Brown County, county line. So that's pretty far out there.
Yeah. There's no doubt. Also, I want to mention we have two listeners in the United Arab Emirates and one in Saudi Arabia, and I thought it brought up an important question for us. What's our feelings on aligning with the PIF if they're the one, if they throw some money at us? Is it a sports washing problem? Are we gonna have, like, would it be like the PGA Tour was, where these golfers have to field questions about this? I feel like it's something that we should discuss, and we should definitely do it in the first 10 minutes of a podcast.
Absolutely, this is what people want to hear.
Yeah.
we're going to go where the money goes. So if they want to talk to us from Saudi, we'll get on board.
Love it. So what else we got? Well, New Heights came to town to take us on. Right?
Yeah. And that's the thing that really stuns me. And I think that you're to blame on this, but I'll throw it on you. You're the podcast mogul in this town now that you've got three shows. You really expanded the Growler. And I think you got on their radar. And that's the problem a little bit here. You can decide how we respond. So New Heights, they had a good thing going. You elevated your podcast, made it a great home for Bengals fans, and added the new shows. You got Dan Pitcher on the show and started breaking down film with the new Bengals free agency signings. I think that New Heights was considering bringing him on their show, and I think you scooped them. Rising new offensive coordinator, who's better to talk to on a national football podcast? You know, Travis could pick his brain a little bit. I think they were mad about that. So they came to our city. They came to Cincinnati with a live show. They charged $100 and they got Joe Burrow on their show and Orlando Brown. They scooped players that we could have had on our show to help elevate us even more. So now the question becomes, how do we strike back? Do we just say, hey, you know, good game. We respect what you do. I'm sure they respect what we do and just kind of go our separate ways. Or do we try and take somebody that could have been on their show and book Taylor Swift on our show? How do you think we respond here?
Yeah, I think Taylor Swift would be a good get for us. I don't know if that's the direction we want to go. Is direct competition and take, I mean, we could do that. We should explore it, but that doesn't mean we have to do it. Maybe we say no to her.
Yeah.
And maybe that elevates us, you know?
That could be a track on her next album. When she gets spurned by the Growler podcast.
I can't wait to hear how she weaves a tale about us saying no to her. Man, a breakup song about the Growler.
It's nice to have that option, though. If we need to play the Taylor Swift card, it's there. We can bring her onto the show and escalate our war with New Heights. But for now, hey, I'm fine with them. We can keep a tentative peace here. Did you were at the show, right?
Yep.
So it was competition.
You were looking for some real, like, get to know Joe Burrow, talk football stuff. There was some of that. But one of my favorite parts of this was there were a lot of Swifties that were at this event. And I wondered what these Swifties were thinking as these girls would sit there and listen to Jason Kelce and Orlando Brown for long periods of time discuss the technicalities of offensive line play, of like kick steps and like chop swipes. And like, but when you take this step, how do you go out and judge? You try to jump. And it's like, can you imagine them going home? Like, how was the show, honey? Was Taylor there? No, Taylor wasn't there. Was Travis? Yeah, Travis was there. He did a lot of yelling and he told some jokes about weird stuff. Yeah. But, what else? I learned a lot about kick steps of offensive tackles and how to stop a chop swipe. You know, it was like, I just can't imagine like that crowd like couldn't have felt like they totally got out of this what they wanted, but, or maybe they did. I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. So there were a lot of Swifties there that were hoping for maybe like a surprise Taylor appearance
or just to be in the presence of her boyfriend. I don't, you know, there was certainly some because they would play. You know, it was kind of like a basketball game without the basketball, where you had all those typical songs you would hear to UC the game, and then they would play some Taylor Swift songs, and then they the crowd, the video board would cut to girls standing up singing and singing everything like almost concert style. And so, yeah, there was some, there was certainly some of that.
So maybe we wait to book Taylor Swift. So for our live shows, our fans are like, ooh, maybe she'll be there. They've talked about booking her. Maybe she'll show up at a draft show. That would be exciting for us.
Yeah, but no real breaking news. At one point, I think he said, you know, we're built to beat the Chiefs and the whole place. Ooh, right? But it was more complimentary of like, why the question was basically about why the Bengals and Chiefs games have been so good and why they've been one team that's had success against them, and pointed out how there's great players everywhere and they're kind of built to beat them, and they've just had these games that have been close. And it wasn't really controversial, but everyone was looking for something. And so that was maybe the biggest thing that you kind of got out of it. At the end, there was, I do say people do listen to the podcast if you want to. At the end, there was a really cool story that Burrow talked about Jason Kelce reaching out to him when Jason had just won the Super Bowl, and Burrow was in the middle of like, should I transfer from Ohio State? He'd had 3 years there and didn't know what he was going to do, and how just the text kind of reaching out to him, because at that time UC was recruiting him and he ended up not coming here, but Jason kind of reached out sort of on behalf of that, but just kind of to a guy who was in a tough place. And Burrow's like, you know, it was kind of made him really emotional just because how helpful he was, and the speech that Kelce had given after the Super Bowl. He said he felt like he was talking to him and does more than you know, and how important that was. And Kelce kind of shared something very similar about how cool it is, you know, the way people that deal with adversity and how so much that's about football. And it was a cool moment to end the show, the two of them kind of sharing that. And I think it kind of tells you why Burrow said yes to this, is that, you know, something like that was kind of a little bit of paying it back for somebody that didn't have to do that for him in the same way. And so I thought that was a cool moment at the end of the show in particular. So if you want to hear that whole story, go listen, of course. But outside of that, you know, not a ton else came through other than a bunch of people seemed to have a good time, I guess.
I like to see that
Travis chugged the beer on stage after getting a fake, a real diploma, because they did a commencement ceremony since they missed theirs.
Oh, that's fun. That's a nice little twist on it. I do like to see, and I saw Burrow's comments. I wasn't at the show, haven't listened to it yet. And of course, that is what everybody wants to hype up and make it a controversy. But like you said, it did seem like there's just a lot of mutual respect and admiration, a lot of glowing talk. So it didn't really feel like a Burrowhead type controversy is going to brew from this, since they were kind of really gassing each other up a lot.
No, and the joke was actually, and I think Jason said it, was, I mean, you know, the one team had to win once to make it a rivalry. And like, yeah, we snuck a field goal in there to finally get one, like kind of joking about the fact that the Chiefs hadn't really beaten the Bengals. And so that, everybody was kind of playing along with it. There was absolutely no reason for it to be anything controversial. So I hope it didn't come off that way, but you know, you never know how things go.
Yeah. Well, out of respect then to Burrow's relationship to Jason Kelce, I can bury our podcast beef for the time being. Wish them well. Are you ready to jump into some Bengals today that we've
got? I am. Let's get some questions going. Let's do it.
We're around the corner from the draft, and I know you did a big wide receiver show with Jay. That was awesome. So people can check that out if you're curious about those guys. So this question is a little bit different. Great offensive tackle draft, great wide receiver draft. So this is from Noah, and we got a similar question from Cameron this week. If you're looking at this draft, what is the disaster draft scenario for the Bengals? Because there's so many good offensive tackles. Is it possible that they're going to luck out no matter, you know, who's left? Because there's just so many options for them. And Sydney has a similar question here. One thing that we haven't brought up yet is something that out there that could actually help the Bengals, like a team jumping ahead of them to draft a position that they don't need, you know, kind of like Jack Campbell and Gibbs last year. They wanted to know your thoughts on that. What's the doomsday scenario for you? And then also what the flip side of that, you know, what could possibly help us that we're not thinking about?
I like that we start with doomsday. Like, let's just, you know, it's Friday. It's Who Dey Light. Let's talk about doomsday. Okay.
Let's have some fun. Yeah. And it is kind of terrifying because as a fan, the Bengals need to crush this draft. Last year, best player available, fill some minor needs, but you felt much stronger about the team overall. This year, there are some positions that they just cannot afford to miss on. You can't have a first round pick become the next Dax Hill where you don't even know how you're going to get him on the field. So looking at this draft, is there just too much good talent there in that first round for them to mess up 18?
So I think that there is a doomsday. Doomsday might be the wrong word. I mean, it's not, I don't think you'll be just appalled by what you would get there. But I do think the thing that you don't want to see is a run on these tackles, is a run on the run on trenches, really, in general. You don't want to see all the tackles. Byron Murphy, I'm not going to go down the Bowers road again. We did that on Wednesday. I was on James Rapine's show, and we had a whole thing on Bowers, and he's a popular topic if he'll make it. I don't know they don't make it. But you don't want to see a run on all of those guys. And you're sitting there, and the only thing you're staring at is the top corners. And not that there's anything necessarily wrong with these top corners at all, because there's not. But they're not, I mean, outside of Quinyon Mitchell, but he played at Toledo. I don't think there's many doubts about Quinyon Mitchell. I think he'll be great. If it's him, you're probably okay. But, you know, Terrion Arnold, he only ran a 4.5. In at a position that's not a Lou Anarumo fit. Like, he does not want guys that are slower, and you may like a ton of things about Terrion Arnold. There's a difference. Nate Wiggins from Clemson, super fast, ran a 4.28, you know, very DJ Turner-esque there, but 173 pounds, short arms. That's two things that, you know, you wonder about with Lou Anarumo being uncertain about. He wants him fast, but he wants him long. How far are you willing to go on that? And it's really small, 173. You got to really think he can put on more weight. So you don't want to be having those questions about things that are really important with your pick at 18. And I think there's a chance that you could have that if you're talking about, you know, the corners now are looking like the best players available on your board. You're probably then trying to discuss trading back. And I bet some people would be willing to trade up for some of the top corners, teams that do need that. So that's probably where you get. So I think that's kind of it. The quarterbacks are going to be, of course, important to watch. There's the top three I think we know are going to go. The J.J. McCarthy thing is, are we getting a smokescreen on him going as the fourth quarterback, four in a row? This time last year, Will Levis was definitely going to go in the top five or whatever, and he ends up going in the second round. He's there on day two. So is that going to happen again, or is McCarthy actually going to get taken? Is someone really going to come up for him in this draft? That's going to be important, because I think when you look at it, I mean, I'm really comfortable with probably 11 players, like really, really thrilled with 11. You got all the tackles. You got Murphy, of course, the receivers that are going to go. And now, you know, the quarterbacks. So add four more onto that. Well, you're still not to 18 yet. But you assume that there's going to be some other stuff that's going to happen in there. And that's kind of the other side of this question. The non-doomsday, we don't have to doomsday this, is, well, yeah, I think the edges, because you're not going to take one of these edge rushers. You're set enough there. They're not all ideal fits for the Lou Anarumo prototype there. They're nice, but they're just, you know, they don't fit what they have traditionally looked for outside, maybe Latu from UCLA, but they're not going to go that direction. So if you could get Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Latu off the board, now you're seeing all the guys that really seem ideal making their way down to you at 18. But yeah, you're counting heads a little bit. Like you're hoping that they make it. You want to see something that comes out of left field. You want to see those other corners. You want to see Arnold and Mitchell, the corners, go off in front of you and let your positions come back. It just feels like it should be a trench pick. That's the best way that this probably goes for them. So with that said, anything that's outside of the trenches here in front of them is good, especially the quarterbacks or the edge rushers. So that's kind of the in front of the Bengals snapshot of best case, worst case to be watching as the first round unfolds.
I do think, as a fan, what concerns me the most is, like you were mentioning, the cornerback pick. The trenches are such a need. You want one of these great offensive tackles. And if you stay at 18, yeah, the worst case scenario is you're probably getting one of those. Maybe not the one you wanted, but there are still some nice consolation prizes. The other thing that worries me is the possibility of a trade back, because you think, oh, there's so many great players. And, you know, in a lot of these mock drafts that were floating around maybe as recently as a week ago, that first pick, it was easy to see the Bengals going with one of the tackles and then Tavondre Sweat maybe in the second round, because there's not a lot of players like that, not a lot of great defensive line game changers. So it is a little bit concerning to me about, like, if they feel more pressure to go D-line or if they trade back, you know, maybe you're getting a little bit riskier there with a trade back, unless you're sure that you're going to get somebody that you really like. I know that, you know, Johnny Newton, I guess, could be a trade back possibility too, if you're big on Newton, but you do start to get a little bit riskier with that when you're looking at those tackle potential. That concerns me. Next question that we have, draft related, and this is still a little bit more, you know, day three talk, right? So we've talked about our first round pick. I know you guys went heavy on receiver, which feels sort of like a second round pick possibility, strong possibility for them this year. But who is this is the okay, I think I forgot who is this from, but that's okay. So whoever sent this, thank you for this question. Who's your favorite day three prospect? Who's your favorite under-the-radar guy the Bengals fans should be keeping an eye on?
Well, there were a couple. I have a story up today that's kind of a Bengals trends using The Beast by Dane Brugler, which is out now, which, you know, you should hopefully download if you care at all about the draft. It's unbelievable. You get it free with your Athletic subscription. Comes with it. That said, I was using things that we know the Bengals lean into. Specifically, you know, they love captains and big schools and places that they've had big moments and big games and these, like, never miss a practice, super high work ethic, defense, relentless most motor, where there's some trait stuff that they look for in terms of speed in the secondary and size on the edge and these types of things. And I was like, I'm kind of trying to take the pieces of the Beast and put those into what we know about the Bengals and find a couple. And one that I liked, one on offense, one on defense that I had in there that I think fit here is tight end Tip Rimann from Illinois. And the reason I like, one, he's, you know, he's an elite tester. I mean, you're talking about a dude who is, let's see, he weighed in and he's 6'5", 271. So big, but still ran a 4.64, which is, he's got tons of speed. His, you know, his relative athletic score is up top, which if you're drafting day three tight ends, you're just, give me the most athletic son of a gun that you can find. And often you'll find ways for that guy to become something. But then when you go down into his profile, you see all of these things. Let's see. We had Dane is so exhaustive in this research. One, he's a super mature dude. Who was like no star recruit and had to work his way in and ended up, you know, it was his great. Get this. This is how Dane's so good. Let me just read this to you. So it says a no star recruit. He wasn't ranked by online recruiting services in a 2020 class. He was recruited as an outside linebacker in South Dakota, had offers from South Dakota and South Dakota State. And then he moved to tight end and that pulled some people off of him. So Ryman's grandfather is a real estate agent, and one of his clients was Rod Smith, the offensive coordinator at Illinois under Lovie Smith. Ryman's grandfather passed along his grandson's highlight tape. Smith offered Ryman a preferred walk-on spot. He decided to pass on a full-ride offer in an FCS program to play FBS football at Illinois. Smith gets fired, but the new head coach is Bert Bielema, who's like an offensive line guru, puts Ryman on scholarship in September. Him and his, and then he ends up getting married to his wife, and she's on the diving team at Illinois, and now she's a coach. He's a 3-time academic All Big Ten guy. Like, this story is wild, but he's self-made, like, crazy athlete who's kind of found a way to turn himself into something. Recently converted into a tight end, can kind of maybe do more if you coach him up. You love those stories. I mean, football matters to him. They called his, quote, give a shit factor off the charts, was what coaches there said about him. So, like, that's the type of player you're looking for. He's got all the physical tools. It matters to him. He's a smart dude. He's pretty mature. that's where you can get more out of somebody like that. So I like, that's like a long-winded answer to a finding a day three prospect.
Shout out the Beast though. Like, what a great story.
It's unbelievable.
That's the stuff you get. I love
it's
it.
Unbelievable. There's over 400. There's over 400 of these reports, and they all look something like that. Like, Dane is unbelievable. Dane is unbelievable. This type.
It's also crazy just that he had Sweat as like a fourth round guy, and he had like the party animal stuff in there, yep. And Class Clown. Like, he had him lower than a lot of people did, and then of course he had his off the field trouble. Now probably will go lower than all those mock drafts had him. So the guy's onto something. He knows his stuff.
He knows.
And I love the grandpa slipping the. The recruiting tape. That's such a nice touch.
What a great shout out, Grandpa. No doubt. The other one I had was a cornerback.
Oh, geez. You scared me there for a second. I was like, what?
No.
Replacing Jake Browning in this draft?
Yeah, that's it. No. DeCamerion Richardson. He's from Mississippi State. But again, Lou Anarumo prototypes, all the physical skills. You know, 4.34, long, one of the, some of the longest wingspan in this draft. You know, he's got his hands on the football, but not interceptions, but you know, around the ball. It's hard to teach guys how to like play the ball in the air and get picks and things like that, but he's around it. And if you can, and you've got somebody who has all the physical skills, you can coach that up. You know, that's Lou's background. If you think you can coach that up, give me somebody with all the physical skills and get them in here. And so that's somebody who kind of fits that, and another guy who it seems to matter to him, and no bad stuff in his background there, at least in the Beast that we know about. So that'd be another day three that you would keep your eyes on that could be a way to fill in the back end of that cornerback room.
Now, I'm a big Notre Dame guy, so I've watched a lot of Audric Estime as a running back. Do you think there's a shot that he could be there and that the Bengals could take him, maybe with like a fourth round pick, you know, big, strong running back and jump over guys?
Yeah, no, I mean, so the thing that they lost with Mixon is the big body back. I mean, they got a bunch of little guys now, and I think they kind of lose a little bit of that power. Do you need that? I mean, you probably want it. But it's the one thing that's maybe missing a little bit for them. So, yeah, I could certainly see a big-bodied running back being the addition to the room. And he would make sense, a guy who probably would be there. We'll see the running backs are going to be interesting. There's obviously not a ton at the top of this draft class at all. But when teams start going in, I wouldn't expect the Bengals to go in any time before Saturday and round four. And even then that feels maybe a little early for where their needs are. You never know, but, that would be this, a style that would make sense. I wouldn't rule that out at all.
Our next question is from William, and big news this week in the fashion world, the possibility of a third helmet for teams, which is very exciting news. So we're going to go run past Boot this. For a third helmet for the Bengals, do you think it's more likely to have the orange stripes on the black helmet? You prefer that? Or do you prefer punting until we get another uni combo in play? Or do you prefer the simple text or a logo we are not expecting? What's your take on the third helmet?
Well, there's one thing we know is that the Bengals don't like the idea of deviating off of their helmet. The helmet is iconic. It's what gets them fans. People, they think it's the greatest in the league. And I don't know that you'll find a ton of arguments over that. The amount of people in Europe or international fans that have become NFL fans that have said the reason they picked the Bengals as their team was because of the helmets. I mean, I hear that all the time, and you hear that a lot from, you know, people who aren't from Cincinnati in general. And you certainly heard that a lot before Burrow and Chase came along. And now it's like, oh, I'm a fan because I like Burrow and Chase, which is totally understandable. But back in the dark days, in the good old days, it was often, well, you know, like the helmets look cool. So they don't want to mess with that, is my point. I certainly don't see like some new thing like Leaping Tiger. That would just, what are we doing? Like, I don't know what that would be about. But I would run with it being out there with the full throwback, the full old school 70s throwback, the uniform, the black with the yellow stripe. You know, you've seen those old hats, the old CB hats. The old Paul Brown hat, basically. And so I think that uniform would call for the helmet that went with that uniform, the orange with the Bengals lettering. I mean, that's to me where the whole thing then makes sense to use to bring in a different helmet. So that's, I think that's where this lands. Whenever they do that throwback, which at some point I'm sure they will, I think that's when the third helmet comes in. I don't see any of these flopping the stripes, doing something new and cheeky. Is cheeky okay? I don't like being cheeky.
Yeah, I don't like the throwback. Black helmet with the orange stripes. No thanks. No.
I've seen it. Like, I get it. I like the way the current the helmet is with the white, all whites. Like, I like the all whites, but so we don't, that's the new, like, that's, it needs to all connect. And the only thing that's going to connect would be the full nostalgic throwback helmet. And that's probably where it ends.
What would be a worst case scenario on helmets for you? What do you think is the worst? Oh, yeah, the Doomsday helmet.
Like, yeah, just leaping or just writing something stupid. I mean, leaping tiger on like a orange. I don't know. Like, I don't do something new that they've never done before that doesn't make any sense. Like, it needs to all, that's my Doomsday. Just doing something to do something.
Yeah.
New.
I don't want is like some sort of like Cincinnati flavor where you get like some people that aren't like big football fans or Bengals fans that are trying to push like a Fiona helmet, or let's put chili on the helmet, you know, something just completely ridiculous and absurd.
Yeah. Like some of those jackets that have all the patches where we've got like Skyline up here and you've got like some Graders back here and yeah, Fiona and like that. That's the last thing anybody wants to see. I'm with you.
Next question. We're getting into a little bit of Paul controversy here. This is from Jim. He says, one of my favorite parts of the old Athletic Live rooms was when Paul would call somebody up on stage. Half the time they would end their greeting with a cheerful "Who Day." Paul, without fail, would leave that "Who Day" hanging like the most awkward of golf course high fives. My assumption was that Paul returning the "Who Day" would go against his journalistic principles of objectivity. A "Who Day" was an implicit cheer for the team, right? But then he goes and he names a podcast "Who Day Light." The hypocrisy. Can you get Paul to explain his relationship with "Who Day"? And is it acceptable for a journalist to "Who Day"? Because obviously you certainly couldn't do it in the press box. Where is the "Who Day" line for you?
Yeah. You know what? I'd never thought about the fact that I just leave these "Who Days" hanging, which is pretty hysterical. Now, I felt like "Who Day Light" is more just, it's more, that's more about you, the listener, right? That's not about me saying, "Hey, Who Day Light." No, it's about you guys are the Who Day people that listen to this. And this is a light brother. That was kind of where I was going with that. You know, the old podcast was "Hear That Podcast Ground." Doesn't mean I was marching up and down the press box singing the fight song after touchdowns. I mean, it's just the title of the podcast, which connects to the fan base here. That would be great. So, and if you, I'm not going to do that, but I mean, I get it.
Justin has a similar question. Is it tough to cover a team? Cause you grew up in Cincinnati, presumably a Bengals guy is a youngster.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is it tough for you to cover a team that you grew up rooting for?
No, I mean, no, I think it's easy to put that aside. I see things and still be the voice of the fan in the city and feel like you're asking the questions that people want asked and be objective. I know the fan base well, which is super helpful. But yeah, going around like saying "Who Day," I feel like that's not where our role is, and I don't want to be like giving "Who Day" high fives to people. And so yeah, but I apologize because I want to be cordial and friendly to people in the live rooms, and I get it, like that's how you're, so I want to apologize now to everyone that feels like I left them hanging, because I certainly didn't need to be, or maybe you enjoyed the leaving hanging portion of the program, but that's certainly not the point of anything I was trying to do. I was not trying to do, it's just I don't feel like I should be going around yelling "Who Day." That's not really at all where I'm at.
I kind of like that idea, though, that people are trying to trick you into it or something, that they're just like trying to goad you into giving it back. Like, come on, Paul, just give it to us. We need that "Who Day" back from you.
I know.
But that is a question that we get a lot. So I'm glad that you've cleared that up. That is important. Yes. Are you ready for some weirder questions?
All right. All right. We've got a weird question segment here. Let's go.
Okay. So this is from Andrew. He wants to establish some podcast etiquette here. So from Andrew, if Jay is Daddy Jay and Dave is Stepdaddy Dave, then who is Mark? Is he the weird uncle, the court jester, or the strange neighbor that pops in once a week? He says the answer can be anything. I just think we need answers.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I appreciate, you know, how stern they're being here. Like, they need answers. They want the truth. And I like that. Now, people who don't know the background here, of course, Jay and I did HTPG forever with The Athletic. And then when Jay moved to Pro Football Network, Dave kind of took over Jay's role, but Dave isn't a reporter. He's an editor, so he wasn't as ingrained. So he was kind of like the stepdad, and Jay was the original dad. People still felt connected to him, but, like, you know, they like Dave, but he's Dave, and he's in the kitchen and he's making the food, and it's like, it's Dave, stepdad Dave. So, but he grew on him, you know, and they learned to accept him. Now you're here. What do you want to be?
That's a great question. I kind of like the idea of the strange neighbor that pops in, you know, because if you look at some of the greatest TV shows, strange neighbor is a fun role. Like, there's a lot of great strange neighbors out there. You know, you have a favorite
Kramer
strange neighbor
of this show?
Yeah. You know, there's the Kramer. Cartoons usually have the better ones, I guess. Dale Gribble on King of the Hill really sticks out as the fun neighbor. You know, court jester's a little too obvious. You know, to be the court jester, the comedian, and just popping in. So I can go for strange neighbor for the show.
Does fun uncle suggest that you're drunk in the morning?
Yeah, I think the fun really covers up a lot of deep mental health issues for that uncle. He really needs to push the fun to everybody. That is his persona that he has. He's projecting that. A lot of fun uncles are not given that title by somebody else. It's a lot of, like, them declaring they're the fun uncle. It's kind of like you're declaring the best ribs in Arkansas, or that you're the biggest Bengals fan in Bali. You know, you can't just throw that out there. You have to earn titles like that. And a lot of fun uncles are just deeply sad people that are, you know, the sad clowns of the uncle world that are trying to project that out there.
It's not where I thought the show was going. The uncle world. Well, I'll say, if you want to be the strange neighbor, then I think that that's what you are. Cause I, you know, I'm here for however you would like to be viewed. Cause I think of you as family. So maybe you could be like a cousin that lives down the street that's strange or something like that. But so you're basically still the strange neighbor, but you're family.
Yeah, I could see the cousin that is like a second season addition to the show. And then at first people hate the new character, but they learn to love him over time. That's how it happens. You know, even this week, every week we do get a few of those comments from people that are like, talk more football. I don't want to hear about this dad stuff or whatever. But we do have a lot of people that are loving this format of the show and getting their questions answered. So see how a new character, whether it's a fun cousin or the strange neighbor, is going to be divisive. But I think over time we will win them over.
Yes. Are you going to ambush me? Are you going to ambush me now? Am I?
Yes.
Am
so I, this is a home I, renovation.
I have a question for you. What is the percentage of people that send you questions? Because of course you can send your questions that you want here on to the growlerpodcast@gmail.com. And that's where we'll get all your questions. But, you know, I try not to look at those because I know a lot of the ambushes end up there. And so what percentage of the ones that are ending up in there are purposely asked to ambush me with? Is there a lot of those, or is it just a few? Because those are the ones I don't see.
Yeah. So I 20% straight ambush. And how much? Some of these 20%, I would say. And now some of these are just, you know, just controversial subjects. What's Paul's take on this? Ooh, let's get him on the record on this big topic, you know, and kind of put his feet to the fire. Then a few of these are deeply personal. People from your inner circle, you don't know. And they're coming at you with, like,
I didn't like the inside nature of last week's. I gotta say that one took me back a little bit. It felt like I don't want the call to come from inside the house. You know, that's the doomsday scenario.
Right. When somebody's going to be like, I was at his house and I saw X, Y, Z happen. That is where it gets a little bit fishy. But yeah, I think we have had a steady increase on those ambush questions. And some of them are just, they don't care if they're ambush questions. They're just so far in left field anyway, that it feels a little odd. Although, like, everybody's relationship with a podcast is going to be a little bit different. So sometimes they might really be curious about your political opinions, or, you know, what your opinion is on a latest TV show or something like that.
Please, no.
We did have somebody that our podcast helped somebody win a game of Scattergories this past week because he was able to name a comedian that started with the letter M. So that saved him from losing. So we help our people, you know, in a lot of different ways.
We really do.
Now, this ambush question is a home renovation question. What's your take on installing a urinal in your personal residence? That's from Brian.
Wow. Is Brian doing this? Do we think Brian has done this? Or
because this is, I don't want to visit your house. Like, I don't want to be near you. I don't want, if I show up and you've invited me over to have a couple of beers and play cards or whatever we're going to do, and I go to the bathroom and I see a toilet and a urinal, I you know, just, I'm going to assume, where's the bodies? Where have you buried them? Like, it's just, this is not the type of place that I want to be. Like, we all can use the regular toilet. Like, there's no need for urinals in a personal residence. I think it shows serial killer tendencies, and I'm leaving immediately.
What's fun to this is because I read this as Brian having aspirational thoughts about installing a urinal in his house. All he's looking for is the approval of his favorite podcaster. So he comes to Paul. He's like, Paul, can I do this in my house? And you're like, no, Brian, you are a serial killer. There is something wrong with you.
Am I wrong?
No.
Am I wrong? Does that feel normal?
I will say this. I'm not opposed to the urinal at your house. If I go to somebody's house and, like, oh, we're all drinking beers, fantasy football draft, and you've got a urinal in your man cave, I'm fine with it. I'm like, oh, that's cute. But putting it in my own residence would be weird, especially from the standpoint that, like, we both have daughters. Like, if we're installing a urinal in our house, that is just for us and for visitors. Like, that's an even bolder statement when you're like, I'm going to put a different toilet in here that is just for my gender, and the rest of you just have to see it and be reminded that this is just for dad.
The amount of heat that I take if I one time leave the toilet seat up is so high. I can't imagine what would happen if I then installed a urinal as to just basically be there to taunt them over and over again. It's like the ultimate power move in leaving the seat up. I don't need that in my life. I don't want that kind of heat. So that's crazy talk. Certainly for me, but I don't. Yeah, don't do it. And if you're in a house where you see someone has installed a urinal next to a toilet, I think you should just probably leave and just maybe never talk to them again.
That's a bold stance on urinals. I think everybody out there that listens to this show that is in the urinal sales business is going to hate us now.
Yeah, you just cross us off the list. No, public places. I think public places need to have more. The biggest problem is if you're a big public place and you go into a bathroom and there's only three or whatever, and you need to have like 10. I'm here for the urinal people. All right,
you're
I'm
pro urinal.
I'm pro urinal. There needs to be more of them in every bathroom in public places. Yeah, there's nothing worse than the single, and then you've got like a couple of stalls or something, and you get the guy, because you get the guy that goes in the stall, and the stalls hold up, man. Like, that thing is, no one's getting in there for a while, and so you need the urinals for the churning of big crowds. That's, I'm pro urinal. Don't turn me into anti urinal now.
It did feel like you had a lot of hidden animosity towards the urinal business, but I'm glad that you've clarified that so we didn't open up a whole new level of controversy for this show. And I do have one comment here that is another ambush comment, because we do go into the comments sometimes against my will. I don't enjoy all of them, because sometimes people leave mean comments about me, which seems cruel when they know that I'm the one that's reading them here. But you posted something about your big board on The Athletic, which is I highly recommend it. Go check that out if you haven't seen the article yet.
People really don't like things. They loved getting the comments on big boards and mock drafts. So I'm curious where this is going.
This guy is just mad about a lot of your approach to it. He's all so here is his comment. Trade up T in the third round pick for a first, get two impact starters, sign Odell. This is the year. Sign Odell feels like a
sign
weird
Odell.
One to throw in there. Like, that's not what this is the year.
The good news is that this person has instantly killed his own credibility by yelling sign Odell. Cause I don't know that anyone is going to end up show me the big impact that Odell Beckham had in Baltimore, by the way. I mean, let's come on here. No,
we'll be waiting for a while. And it sounds on paper fun having that second first round pick, but then, you're going to have to go with one of those receivers probably to fill that T. Higgins void. And I don't know that the trade is going to be as clean as just T and a third round pick to get another mid-level first round pick anyway. Nobody's but sign Odell. Yeah, that's my favorite part of that is that they're just going to slip that in there. That might be Odell's burner account. That's my theory now is that he's just – kind of floating his own name in some of these.
Odell's so desperate for work. He's just dropping comments, sign Odell into like all kinds of different individual team podcasts to drum up some respect.
Okay. Yeah. He's like, hey guys, don't forget about Odell. And he's just tweeting it nonstop. I mean, that's just like another desperate play. Just like your grandpa, the realtor, handing your high school highlights to an offensive coordinator. You know, sometimes those moonshots work out and you become a great day three draft pick. And sometimes it's just a desperate aging NFL star that can't get any more traction.
A lot cuter when it's the grandpa with the tape than it is the like multi-millionaire receiver who's maybe washed.
Maybe like what? He wouldn't bring anything to this team. There's nothing.
No, I don't want to. I mean, I'm not. I think maybe washed is a fair assessment of where Odell is at.
And I think just fully washed is just as fair. Fully washed.
Somewhere between maybe and fully washed on Odell would be my analysis.
Okay, so can I run a joke by you now?
Yep, let's go. Comedy time. I mean, you got to get yourself warmed up for tonight.
Yes, I'm in this Sheraton Plaza Hotel all day. I'll be working on jokes for the St. Charles Funny Bone tonight. And if you want to see me, I'm in Ohio with Josh Sneed, friend of the show, April 19th and 20th at the Dayton Funny Bone. And I'll be at the Thoroughbred Theater near Lexington on April 26th. So you can catch me there. So I've got this new joke that I've been working on. I have an older joke about the Nextdoor app. Are you familiar with all like the Nextdoor people that are out there?
Oh, yeah.
That's one of my favorite websites to be on. And because the pettiness is just off the charts with Nextdoor. The one thing that really struck me recently is just because the housing market is still kind of hot, especially in the Cincinnati area. And we had somebody poke into ours. And this is how ruthless it is, right? So this lady posts that she's moving from out of state, wants to move to this community. And she writes that I'm looking for a 3-bedroom house with at least one bathroom. And right away, that's like at least one bathroom. Are people out here in 0-bathroom houses? Is somebody out there like, hey, yeah, look at my place.
I've seen finished basement. Those shows where they build houses out in the middle of nowhere, like, and maybe they just sometimes they don't make one with a bathroom inside and you got to go out into the woods with like a hole or something like that. Maybe that's what she's familiar with. She's been doing a lot of buying real estate in like rural Montana.
Okay, because in my head, it's like she's buying a suburb house and it's like, hey, everybody, look, I've got a finished basement. I've got a renovated bedroom here. And look at the master. And it's only downside. If you need to pee, you have to walk down the street to McDonald's. That's your only option. So she posts this. Right away, somebody jumps in. Hey, you could move in. I think there's going to be a house on my street available soon for you to check out. She said, great. When is it listing? And the lady was like, I'm not sure when it's listing, but the guy that lives there is very old and I think he's pretty sick.
What?
That's the ruthlessness. And that is what she threw out there. It's like, this guy is circling the drain.
Keep an eye on the hospice listings. Like, what are we talking about? This is, man, we've got to be better.
I know, it's crazy. Like, and then that guy's going to see it and have to like jump in and defend his declining health. like he's a political candidate or something. Like, no, I'm still okay.
Is he going to see it? You think he's on Nextdoor? You think
old people love Nextdoor at this point?
Yeah,
that's their favorite thing, is to get on there and complain about everybody, or post a picture of a snake and ask what kind of snake it is. That is what old people live for. They love it.
Yeah. Yes. I'm with you. I need to get back into the Nextdoor world. It became too much, where you're just like, wow, I'm seeing way too many curious alerts that I'd rather be oblivious, I think. So maybe I need to dive back in and learn more about snakes and people targeting the olds in their own community.
It is the people are ruthless on Nextdoor. There was a friend that lived in a different city. He was telling me that somebody tried to ruin the marriage of somebody on his street. This woman posted a big thing because she noticed an Amazon truck parked in her neighbor's driveway every like couple days around lunchtime for like a good 40 minutes. And so she did like this big thread that was like, is Amazon delivering more than just packages?
Wow.
Like, yeah. And it went like 30 comments deep before the woman saw it, and she had to defend herself. And she was like, yeah, I am hooking up with an Amazon driver. It is my husband who has been driving for Amazon for 6 years. So they didn't even pay attention to what their neighbor did for a living, just went straight to the accusal phase.
Love it. I absolutely love it.
Dad.
Yeah, it's dad lifetime, isn't it?
It is dad lifetime, because we did get a dad life question specifically for you this
week. That's right. That's right.
We had one listener that wants to know, when it comes to dad stuff, how far are you willing to go when interacting with your daughters? He's laughing at the idea of Paul letting his girls give him a makeover with a wig and all. So how far do you go?
Oh, as far as we need to go. I am all in on this. Like, look, if you are a girl dad, this is your life. Okay. Like, and there is nothing more fun for them than putting their stuff on you. Okay. Like, they love it. So when we go on vacations, like, we know early in the vacation, there is going to be them painting my toenails, and I'm now putting on wigs. They don't usually go buy wigs for me, but I would be open to it. Putting anything on my bald head is not terrible. Like, it's fine. I don't mind. The only rule is I don't do the fingernails, because, you know, I don't need to be, I like having it on my toes, because anytime I'm in front of somebody that I feel like I want to make sure that I'm presenting myself a certain way, whatever, guess what I have? Shoes on, probably, hopefully nice ones, right? I'm not out there open-toed, you know, just hanging out, talking to Duke Tobin, right? That's not how it goes. But, you know, on vacation, in and out of the pool, around the house, it's funny. It makes people laugh whenever they look down and forget about it. And there's my pink toenails, and my girls love that. So I'm all about that. I will do whatever, especially when it's vacation time or whatever. So yeah, I have zero problem. And I think if you are a dad of girls, especially, or really anything, you need to be there. Like, you need to be willing to let them do whatever within reason. But I'm not, like, I don't want it on my fingernails or something like that, so that I'm, you know, I want to be able to, because I don't mind leaving it. Like, I'll leave it till it goes away. I mean, it'll last months. I had one time some guy was coming over and delivering something to my house. I don't even know what it was. And he came to the door, and he, like, knew, listened to the show or followed, big Bengals fan or something like that. And he's like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And he just kind of looks down and starts laughing. And I don't know what he's laughing at. And I had, you know, pink toenails. And I was like, oh, yeah, I have girls. And I hadn't needed to explain myself, because I wonder if he'd be in the comments soon. Like, he'd be on Nextdoor before you know it. A lot of questions about Dana. Not sure what's going on down there.
Breaking news.
Kids. Yeah.
I do think, and what's interesting to me about that is, like, that you draw the line with the fingernails. Like, you're afraid they're going to give you the Caleb Williams treatment or something, and kind of put something.
Well, I don't like the way painted fingernails look on me. Okay. Like, I have no problem if others do it. I don't want to present that as me. But I don't mind. Toenails.
Like, I've done it before. Not that I've done it personally, but my daughters have done it to me before. And The first time was before an NCAA tournament game, and I'm a big Xavier fan, so I was cheering them on, and they won. So I showed up at the bar with painted fingernails and like, listen, you guys know the drill. I've got daughters. It's fine. I'm fine with it. I'm confident in myself. I've never gone on stage with painted fingernails. I do think that would be different because you're talking about professional capacities and having that. But I was fine showing up at the sports bar with it when they won. Now, all of a sudden, I've got to recreate it, you know, keep the mojo going. So I had to have them paint the nails before the next round's game just to see if that had any effect on my favorite team winning.
I always think, you know, this has kind of become the doomsday episode, but I always think of the doomsday scenario of doing things like that. I always laugh about people. No, this is, I don't mean this in a bad way, but like, if you paint your face or your body and you go to a game and you're into it, like that's fun. And you're the cool, fun guy that did the paint. And I'm not going to go down the putty like the Devils or anything like that. But like, you know, you're trying to be super supportive. The flip side of that is when they take an L and you've got to do the sad walk out of the stadium and you're all painted up everywhere. And it's just like, it's all over you of like your shame, you know, of, ugh. This team that I love has let me down, and now I have to just soak in my own fame L. And it's hard. I just feel like that's hard.
Yeah, for sure. But I do think at least with the nails, people will find that endearing. They're not going to be like, oh, Paul, what's with the nails? To be like, oh, that's cute, Paul. You did the nails. Face paint for a sports game. You're right. That is a different level of shame after a loss. It's the saddest time you're washing off makeup in your hotel room or your house after a tough L like that. But I do think you should commit. Start doing the fingernails. Let's see it out there, you know?
All right. Maybe. We'll see. But then you're doing the remover.
Remover stinks.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the remover life, but that's fine. I'm fine with it. Like again, I'll go there. I'm not afraid, especially on a vacation. Like I'll do it. I'm not against it, but it's just a matter of, well, now I'm going out today. I got to make sure I got to get the remover on or whatever. So that's all. But I'm willing to go just about anywhere. I'm willing to go just about anywhere. I feel like you have to. What do you got going on in dad life? I mean, you've abandoned your children this weekend, so that's tough.
I have. I'm on the road, which is nice. You know, I get to sleep in at this hotel that's being constructed around me, which is very fortunate. But for me, like, so this week I've missed the soccer games, but I did want to ask you how your T-ball coaching is going, because like our soccer teams are in full force now. We had our first weekend of games, and our older team had a great draw. The Orange M&Ms, that's our team name with our orange jerseys. The girls voted for that, which is cute. And then our 8-year-olds are the champions. That's the name that they picked. They won 3-1. And then our little 4-year-olds, they don't keep score. But these boys and girls, we were scoring too many goals that the other team started crying and having breakdowns and stuff, meltdowns mid-game. So as a coach, I had to sort of manage that and sort of help the other team out. I assisted on a few of their goals just to try and keep the spirits high and navigate that. But I wanted to see how your T-ball coaching was going.
Well, it's opening weekend this weekend. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. We've attempted to have 5 practices and we've had 1. And now we got to go play a game. The rain has totally taken us out. So we'll see what happens. We've not really practiced anything that resembles a game yet to this point. We've just done the one practice doing drills and kind of trying to get ready. So we're going to lean on everybody's experience from maybe last year or whatever they've played baseball before to get us through this first couple of games. And we'll see what happens. We'll see if we can take it to St. Mary's a little bit. I don't anticipate, you know, it looking clean, but that's okay. It's kind of spring training, really, more than anything. So we're going to try to work our way through it. But yeah, excited. It's a big opening day weekend.
One practice. I think this is a lot of people are extra eyes on the coaching in this. You really get to see if the coaching shines through, because the other team probably hasn't practiced much either. So you're kind of just based on the talent you were given and what the coaches in-game adjustments look like here. And we'll get to see if they made the right call with you as the head coach.
There's an old line in Bengals media lore that was used by Bruce Coslett at one point after a significant loss or just a series of losses or something being questioned on. And I believe this was off the record.
and it just came out. It's 100% the players. And I feel like I'm going to take on Bruce Cosley, you know, I'm going to 100% the players. That's what it's just going to have to take the blame for this. No doubt. I'm going to be under the microscope. Players win games, coaches lose games. That's what matters. That's how we look at it. Okay.
100%.
That's it. Unless you're Bruce back in the day, 100% the players. All right. This is good. Good luck on your gigs this weekend, and we'll have you back. We'll have you back in the homestead. Although you got to leave the Bibles behind you. So maybe make sure we can get your own Bibles back behind you next week.
We forgot to do our post-show Book of Mormon reading. We'll do that.
That'll be separate. We'll do that. That'll be a separate after show thing. Deleted scenes type stuff. We'll do that. Yeah.
Put it on the Patreon.
That's right. All right. Thanks, Mark. Sounds good. We will send in your questions. You can send them to growlerpodcast@gmail.com. You can choose to ambush me or just send whatever you got. You drive the show. We love you when you guys drive the show and take it whatever direction wants to go. And you never know where that's going to be, which I think we definitely proved again this week. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you next time. Have a good weekend.